Hello, I'm Candace Burke, and this is Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Silver City, New Mexico, Kuru 89.1 FM, and online at gmcr.org. Our purpose is to enhance public awareness of our nonprofit or advocacy organization in Grant County and surrounding area. Today, I'm joined by guests Chris Jepson and Jana Mintz. Chris and Jana are both librarians, seed librarians, in fact, for the Southwest New Mexico Seed Library. Welcome to Community Spotlight, Chris and Jana.
Thanks, Candace. Thank you. Nice to be here. Yeah.
Well, that you're both here. I've been looking forward to this for a while. Now, before you tell us all about the history, mission, current, and future projects of the Seed Library, tell us more about how the two of you became involved with the Seed Library.
So I retired in November of 2020, and I had already been visiting the Seed Library that was sort of located at the Commons, but had gotten a bit jumbled without a caregiver through COVID, and thought, boy, I've got some organizational skills and I love seeds and I'm going to be looking for something to do. So I jumped in. I contacted Ben Rasmussen with the National Center for Frontier Communities, who sort of is our fiscal agent for the Seed Library, and had gotten money that he was able to order seeds. We continued to get donated seeds and order some seeds to supplement. It was over in the Quonset Hut. And I think one of the first days that I was out at the farmer's market with the Seed Library, somebody mentioned Jana to me, you could take it from there, Jana.
So I think in March of 20, it's like so hard with the COVID.
21, yeah.
March 21, I went to the farmer's market and I met Chris, who was there with the seeds for the Seed Library. And we got to talking, and she told me that there was going to be a seed school offered through the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance. And she was encouraging local people to sign up for the seed school. So I signed up along with four other people from the county, and we all participated in learning all about seeds through the Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance, I guess starting in, I don't know, April or May 2020.
Yeah.
And we had seed projects, and I've been a gardener for a long, long time, and I've been saving seeds since I first started gardening over 30 years ago. So it was a natural to start working with the Seed Library.
That's it. And Chris, you too are a gardener, right? You have your own.
I am. I actually was in the Peace Corps. The first garden that I was really independent of my parents of was 1985 in the Dominican Republic, working with Haitians on the cane cutting on the Batays where they lived. And I got to acquire seeds, and they knew way more than I did about growing in the climate. But that was my first garden, and I've always grown since then. So
now let's hear all about the history, the mission, and current projects with the library.
Yeah, so I just went and made sure that I had the mission in front of me. The group of people that went through the seed school with Rocky Mountain, we actually were meeting fairly regularly. Since then, people have gone in different directions, but we feel really supported by that initial group still. And we came up with a mission. So preceding that group deciding on a mission for the Seed Library, I'm not sure what it might have been, but this is what we have: to nurture a community of growers and seed stewards who harvest and exchange seeds, protect the sovereignty and diversity of our local food system, and increase our community's ability to feed itself. So
that's lovely. I love that.
It was fun to come up with that together. And I think it's a pretty good mission to focus on. So, And then I'm going to go ahead and just say that ideally we have satellite locations throughout the community. The seeds are always free. We really goal to not have patented seeds. As many seeds are that can be located are grown locally and donated locally, but we do order seeds as well to fill in the gaps. And we have a nice collaboration with the Native Native Plants of New Mexico, the Gila branch of the Native Plants of New Mexico. But we have locations, the Commons, Silver City Farmers Market. We're hoping for a new location in Mimbres and the Public Library in Silver City and in Bayard, Single Socks, and the Public Library in Gila. So we've got 6 locations that are alive and well and hoping for one to be reopened in the Mimbres.
Now, if someone, you know, wants to, you know, pick up the seeds, what is the process of them doing that?
So we have cards for people to fill out, and we've sort of gotten to a place that if you filled out a card before and you want to get an email or communication from us, we try and send a newsletter once a month, that they can provide that information. But because the idea is that these seeds are free, that we really aren't asking people to give us anything more but to consider donating seeds back. And Jana has been, I'll let you talk about this, Jana, yeah, but she's been really instrumental in educating people about not only the importance of saving seeds, but how to do it.
Well, educate us, Jana, because I'm one of those that needs all the help she can get. And there's not a seed of doubt about that.
Well, one of the nice things about our arrangement with the Frontier Communities as being supported by them is they were able to get us a grant for educational purposes. So starting last winter, I started teaching classes on soil, gardening in our climate, plant families, and we did a seed saving workshop with Nikki Hill. And so we shared all kinds of seeds and like what their mechanism is of growing and things like that. So I like to tell people, because sometimes people are really afraid of saving seeds, or they've been told by somebody along the line that they can't save seeds. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I just met with someone who said her husband said she can't save hybrid seeds, which is not true either. It's just that if you save seeds from hybrid plants that were grown from hybrid seed, you won't get an offspring that's true to the parent, but you can still save those seeds and they will likely grow out another tomato, for example. And what I like to do is teach people about the easiest seeds to save, which are peas, beans, tomatoes, and lettuce, because they're not generally cross-pollinated by insects. So they're self-fertile. They don't need pollen from another plant to be saved. And they're all pretty easy to save.
What can you add to that, Chris?
Well, I want to put a plug in, Jana. With the funding that we got through the National Center for Frontier Communities or the Food Hub, part of it was to develop educational materials. And just last week, Jana and I have kind of fine-tuned drafts. She did the bulk of the work of putting these together on those 4 seeds and how to save them, and just really great tips. So we will have brochures about those plants, little cards, I should say, simple to read and hopefully widely distributed, about the seed library. And then a 6th one that we're hoping to add to that little bundle of informational cards is what it means to be a seed steward. And I'm going to toss it back to Jana because she's...
Yeah, how does one become a seed steward?
So a seed steward is someone who commits to growing at least one variety, or maybe wildcrafting a variety, a plant variety, that they'll be able to bring seeds back to the library so we can start distributing more locally grown seeds. And the reason why we want to start distributing more seeds that are grown locally is that when your plants make it through a season, they become genetically adapted to the circumstances that they grew in. So we might have a super, like this year, we've got a lot of rain. We might have something that made it through the rain and didn't damp off and didn't get moldy. And those would be good seeds to save. And other years we might have, you know, a longer stretch of dry season. And if something made it through that dry season really well, those would be great seeds to save. So we want to save a variety of seeds from our gardens that we can then distribute locally, and people can get the benefit of those diverse genetics.
That's it. And Chris, what else did you want to say about that?
How can you tell that I just am ready to talk?
I just can tell.
So I would add, you know, I just got back from the Native Plant Society of New Mexico conference in Albuquerque, and I learned about growing cacti from seed and also just native plants in general. There were two different sessions that I signed up for, specifically thinking about the our seed library. And there was much discussion. The whole first day of the conference was about climate change and how are seeds adapting and how quickly they are being forced to adapt and yet can. But that makes it even more important that we have seeds that even like from year to year get what's happening in our community. And I think my training, I'm a nurse and actually a dietitian as well, retired, but have always been thinking like, how can we feed our communities in the best way? And I think that ties into why I'm working with the Seed Library, because there's nothing that makes me happier than having a great potluck where everybody brings food from their garden that they have harvested and they have nurtured, and we're going to have an event like that. I can segue right into the events that we're planning. And Jen, I know you can interrupt me as needed. So,
is all very exciting, because that segues into what are your favorite seeds to plant, native seeds for both of you? What are those?
Go for it, Jenna.
Native seeds. Well, I'm excited because this year I'm in a new location with a new garden, and I have a lot of horsetail milkweed growing, and it's been a great plant to attract all kinds of pollinators, wasps, native bees, honeybees. And so I've started saving the milkweed seeds. They're just starting to ripen right now. And what's amazing about the milkweed seeds is they have this great parachute that carries them. And then the seed drops them down into the ground where they drill into the ground and they can grow in the place they find.
Those are such fun seeds, and they are so beautiful.
What do they look like? What do the seeds look like?
The seeds themselves are, I don't know, maybe about an eighth inch long, and they're a brown seed. It's not like they're an exciting looking seed, but but they have this great parachute. They have this great fluff ball attached to them. And so the wind carries them and they're able to find new locations to grow. And that's what's really amazing to me. There are lots of seeds I like to grow. It's not a native, but it's calendula. And what's interesting about calendula is it drills itself back down into the soil because it has these little barbs on the covering that coats the inner seed. These seeds just have these tremendous abilities to find places that work for them to grow. Other seeds will catch in little cracks between rocks and just start growing there.
That is really exciting, actually. It really is, because there's so much. I know there are a lot of listeners like me that really haven't had the experience until, more recently. I'm lucky to have a mentor right now. A retired horticulturist is helping me grow little hybrid tomatoes in her backyard. And I just didn't realize how much really goes into it. It's remarkable, actually.
I agree. Yeah. And Candace, I think my answer to that question, as I'm learning more about native plants and I'm going on hikes where it's just magical once you start seeing things differently, is I think I'm learning the orange globe mallow is always magical and there's no need to plant that at all. But I think even 5 years ago, I probably would have been, I've got to pull that. That doesn't belong here, because I just didn't know. I was in the garden right before I left for the Native Plant Society, and I had an app, and there's several really good apps. There's an iNaturalist that's free, and there's a Picture This that does have a fee after a week of free, but where you can point your camera of your phone on a plant, and it'll identify it for you. So I had a good time weeding the things I didn't want in my garden with a little bit more knowledge. And someone at the Plant Society said, why are you pulling anything? And it's like, well, one, I don't want those plants in my garden, but two, they're invasive and I don't want them to go to seed. So just understanding a little bit better what things can be invasive, whether or not they are native, consider, are they drought tolerant? Are they going to be invasive? And, you know, what do you want to just be conscientious of in terms of planting? So that collaboration with the Native Plant Society, I think, is really important.
It is. And I love just hearing that word magical. You feel that, Jana, you see the magic and what grows. You feel it, whether you're hiking, you're looking at your garden. That must be a common experience.
Absolutely. And see, I'm also a beekeeper. So I'm plants that support pollinators. And it's really fascinating to see, for example, the milkweed. I didn't know the honeybees would be on the milkweed, but the honeybees are on there, the giant wasps, the tiny wasps. And the other thing that I've learned about those types of flowers that are clustered, these small white cluster flowers, is they invite wasps into your garden. And there are a lot of predatory wasps that then will lay eggs in caterpillars that may be pests, and then the larvae will grow, their babies will grow out of the caterpillars. So the whole cycle, like, you're either feeding on something or something's feeding on you. And it's magical, because those milkweed are attracting their own type of aphid. And now I have a nice colony of ladybugs starting on the plants. And, you know, it's just insect haven. It's just amazing.
Yeah. And what would you say the best flower pollinators are?
I don't know that there's one best. What I recommend for people, if they're thinking about attracting pollinators, is certainly including native plants. But you have to plant things that are going to bloom throughout the season. So, you know, and then there are different insects that are attracted to different plants that maybe have a host plant, and maybe they don't live all season. Maybe they live 4 to 6 weeks. The honeybees, which live year round, are attracted to fragrant flowers, typically that are white, yellow, or blue. But our hummingbirds are attracted to the red flowers. So, you know, just plant lots of flowers, and they're also attracted to garden plants. So cucumbers and squash are attractive to pollinators, and they need the pollinators so that they can create fruits. Just plant lots of flowers.
And, you know, you mentioned that there are some future endeavors you have going. I want to hear more about what those future projects are.
So actually, this Saturday at the farmers market, there will be many kids' activities. And we are planning on having some seed matching activities where the seeds can be touched and felt, and then try and match them to pictures of plants. And then Jana has some plans for some basic seed saving techniques. So that'll be at the farmers market down on Pope Street. Jana, anything you want to add to that event?
Well, so as I mentioned, tomatoes is a great seed that one can save, but they need to be fermented. So I'll be bringing tomato seeds that are already fermenting so people can see the process that they go through to in order to save them. And then we're going to have radish pods so people can see where the seeds come from in the radish pods. And I think that's it.
You know, just circling back to to kids and plants. You look at the mythological formation we get as children and stories. I know I go back to the Jack and Beanstalk. That had a huge effect on me reading about. Not that I've come close, listeners, about growing anything like that. I need all the help I can get.
Well, speaking of beans, I'm going to tell you a short story, because one of the things we did in our seed school was create stories to talk about seeds. So when I was a new gardener, I don't know, maybe 1990, somebody gave me some seeds from her garden. She gave me a black seeded pole bean, which I started growing. And I wasn't going to go ask her for more seeds. So I saved those initial seeds, and I've been growing them out from time to time for many, many years. And when my daughter left home and started her own garden, I sent her with some seeds. green seeds, of course. So I asked her at the end of the season if she saved her seeds. And she spoke to me like I was nuts. And she said, of course I save seeds, Mom. It's obvious. It's intuitive. But it's not intuitive unless you've been watching someone your whole life save seeds. And it's teaching that to children, which I think is really important, because a lot of people don't know where their food comes from, or they don't associate the seed with the food and what it looks like, which is why we're doing this matching activity with the kids, so they can see if they can identify which plant grows which kind of seed, because they come in so many shapes and sizes.
And some of them are so fun to hold in your hand and touch. So we do have a couple more events, Candace. Is this an okay time to mention them?
Yes, please do, as we wrap up today's show. Let's hear about more events.
So on September 17th, we're having a harvest potluck and seed swap. So if you don't have seeds to swap, please come. If you don't have food that you've grown in your garden, there's the farmer's market, there's the co-op, there are places, there's neighbors. If you can bring something that has a local ingredient in it, that's the idea. And we'll have lots of information at that potluck and seed swap, which will be at the Commons, September 17th, 11 to 1, about being seed stewards. So our hope, Jan and I are hoping we'll have lots of other seed-saving nerds to share information, maybe have a little bit of a book group, and really develop the joy that we have for saving seeds. And the last one is just that we'll be presenting on October 30th at the Unitarian Universalist Church, and that will be probably similar to this presentation about what the seed library is about, and maybe some more information from Jana about specifics with seed saving and seed sovereignty.
Well, it's so cool just to see. Our listeners can't see you visually. I can, because we're on a Zoom interview, but I could just see the joy just radiating from the two of you. I wish the listeners could see what I'm seeing. It's obvious you both love what you're doing.
Yeah. And actually, I will put a plug in pretty much every Tuesday from 1:30 to 3:30. A group of us, there have been some long timers that have come like almost every Tuesday. We package seeds. So we get donated seeds that need to be winnowed. The chaff have to be taken off of the seeds so that we can package them. I make labels that we put so that they're in nice portions to distribute to all of our satellite locations. So anybody can come to that and help us out.
That's wonderful. Any other contact information you can share with us? Anything? You have a Facebook presence.
Seed stewards, and then we do have an email that is specifically for the seed library. So it's swnmseeds@gmail.com. So that would stand for Southwest New Mexico. swnmseeds with an S at the end of seeds at gmail.com. Anybody can communicate. I'm the primary person that checks that, but Jana also has the ability to check it as desired. But that's where we send the emails from.
And we have a Facebook page, and people search on Southwest New Mexico Seed Library and find that Facebook page.
And the Seed Stewards is the group that's attached to that page.
Is there anything else you want to add briefly before we say goodbye today?
I just want to add again the issue of our climate and the climate changing and dealing with those basically unpredictable weather patterns is what I would say we've been seeing, and how important it is for us to grow seeds locally that are going to be able to grow well in that environment so that we can continue to grow healthy food for our communities.
Chris, what can you add to that?
I'm not sure that there's more to add other than how fortunate I feel to have organizations like Kuru, GMCR, and the Seed Library, and the Commons, and the Food Hub. A fun thing that happened at the Food Hub last week. So if you don't know about the Food Hub, come and check it out. 3 o'clock-ish at the Commons, where there's food that is distributed. People can basically, what's the word I'm looking for?
Let's join us. It's a CSA. It's a community supported agriculture product.
Exactly. Thank you. Like a CSA. They had these beautiful melons. And Jana texted me afterwards and said, I know you got one of those melons. Save the seeds, because we should distribute seeds from those melons. So we talked about what the best way to save the seeds were. And yeah, anyway, just all the collaboration that happens is what makes a community healthy. And I feel pretty lucky that I've landed here. And lucky that Jana landed here and is willing to work with me. I think we both feel that we've kept going because we have each other to be supportive and nudge when we need to get some activity going. So, yeah.
Well, I have to say it was a delight having you both on my show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Candace.
Thank you. It was great being here.
Community Spotlight airs every Thursday at 10:30 a.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. You are listening to Community Spotlight on Gila Members Community Radio, Silver City, Mexico, Kuru 89.1 FM, and online at gmcr.org. And again, this program can also be available online once it's posted. I'm Candace Burke. May you be well and happy.